guys, it's going to be a long one tonight, so settle in. Pacers are eliminated. Heat are eliminated. Timberwolves were eliminated a long time ago.
Oh, my God.
Blackhawks are in the playoffs. Wild are in the playoffs. Panthers aren't. We still got to cover the Final Four. We got to talk Aaron Hernandez. We got to talk the fact that we have a website. And we got to do two trivia questions. So, let's just get going. This is the 51-yard line, episode 16, taping this on a lovely Wednesday night, Wednesday, April 15th, to be exact. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, Drew Sifwillers.
Thanks for listening, guys. I'm now a quarter of a century old.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah. Happy one-day belated birthday. It was our boy's birthday last night.
Yeah. Thank you all for all your love and support. Thanks for listening, guys.
And, of course, can't forget the man, the myth, Steve Cravens.
What's going on, everybody?
Yeah, we got a lot to get into, so let's just get the not fun stuff out of the way. Aaron Hernandez, ooh, today at about 7:30 Pacific time this morning, I was sitting in my car waiting to go into the office watching this go down. Aaron Hernandez, convicted, first-degree murder. Life sentence without the possibility of parole. If you were living under a rock for the past 2 years, Aaron Hernandez was a former tight end for the New England Patriots, charged with murder in the first degree of Odin Lloyd, basically a family friend.
Semi-pro football player, too.
Yeah, yeah, also that. Yeah, this was a... It was a long time coming. It was almost exactly 2 years ago. Well, not quite 2 years ago, when he was arrested and indicted for this for said crime. And the verdict has finally come down. Charged, he's found guilty in five counts. One of them being first degree murder. The other, all weapons charges. And yeah, he's got another trial coming up next month
for
a double homicide in Boston. Jeez. But which is more, at this point, it's more about justice for the victims than it is fucking up him, because he's already going to, he's already sentenced to life without parole.
That fucks up your day, man.
Well,
that's,
I was actually honestly worried for a little bit, because it's the jury, well, they were deliberating for what, 6 days?
Seven days.
Usually when juries are deliberating that long, you sometimes got a hung jury, and I was honestly, I figured even if he somehow walked off this one, it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to walk away from the other two at all. But he didn't walk from this one. They threw the book at him, which is great, seeing as how that most of what they had on him was circumstantial. It was basically all circumstantial evidence, and
it was circumstantial, but the defense did a bafflingly bad job of refuting most of that evidence.
Why did they admit that he was at the scene at all?
Yeah,
at the end?
Yeah, and that's the kicker. That's the kicker.
They spent
9 weeks refuting all the evidence that put him at the scene of the crime, and then in their closing argument they went, "Well, all right, guys, so he was there, but he didn't do it." And by that point, when you hear the jury after the verdict came down, they answered or somewhat answered some reporters' questions, and like you could just hear it in their voices that from the beginning, like they were just like, we don't understand, like what the defense was doing. It didn't make any sense. No one buys the fact that he was there, but he didn't commit this crime. So I mean, yeah, there was a long deliberation, but at the end of the day, it sounded like everyone was on board, mostly from the beginning, for murder in the first degree.
I mean, it's kind of crazy that they got that without witnesses or a smoking gun.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they had 134 witnesses for the prosecution, so...
Well, I mean, just from what NFL Network said, like, no, you know, witnesses at the actual scene.
Yeah,
you're right,
but, like...
And they never recovered the murder weapon.
And never recovered it. I mean, it's
his fiance's testimony was just full of holes.
That was a dumpster fire.
That went really poorly.
I don't think they had that in mind.
I mean, one guy I wish we could get on here is Coughlin, because he's, you know, studying law right now, and he's a Patriots fan. So I would have loved to hear his opinion.
Well,
on this.
You should ask him if he wants to come on and talk with us one day.
I love that.
I'd like to pick, he's a diehard Patriots fan, and he's starting to become a lawyer. I'd like to pick his brain about some of this stuff. But, I'd like to, because there were some people that were wondering if it was going to be more like murder in the second degree as opposed to murder in the first degree. It's like, was this like, because technically it wasn't premeditated, but it was like excess. Like, I don't remember the exact term that they used, but it was like extremely excessive. Like, Odin Lloyd was shot 6 times, and so that's why they deemed it murder in the first. As opposed, I guess the way they said it, like, as opposed, if he had just been shot, like, once in the chest or something, like, it probably would have gone down as murder in the second degree, which isn't mandatory life with no parole.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to pick his brain. So
it's kind of eerie little tidbit. I don't know if you guys heard this, but where he's going to be serving time is exactly like, it's a 4-mile drive from Gillette Stadium.
Yep.
Like he's pretty much right where he made his bread and butter. He's going to be serving time.
And where he would have made, you know, full dinner if he hadn't screwed it up.
$40 million contract he just lost.
I can't believe, like, how do you fuck that up?
Easily, apparently.
Ah, I mean, I guess, man.
Very, very, very easily, apparently.
Just make your money and don't kill people. Stop snorting.
It's not that hard to not commit crimes, especially when you're a pro athlete and you make millions. And that's a perfect segue, because I wrote, I think, like an 800-word piece today. It's mostly just a tirade on why athletes decide that they need, that they just, why would an athlete commit a crime when he's got a $40 million contract? So I just went on a rant about that. You can look for that on the 51yardline.com. Guys, that is our blog/website that is live as of right now.
So there you go.
Go check it out.
Yeah, so that's the first article I've got up there, and we'll have more coming in the near future, so you can check that out. But I'll explain more about that in the plugs at the end. But back to Aaron Hernandez. I mean, you guys have any other thoughts? I mean, I think we all saw this coming. I don't think it's – I'm not
– like I said,
I'm not sure it was really a surprise to that many people, even though
– the sentence was to me.
I'm not going to lie. I was a little – after 7 days of deliberations and just, you know, OJ got off.
That's true.
Like, I mean, it just did it would have surprised me and not surprised me at the exact same time, if that makes any sense at all.
I don't know.
If they would have let him walk, they'd have been like, well, that fucking figures. Like,
I think it was just like when I read the sentence, it took me a while to, like, register. Like, I mean,
yeah, man.
When you just read it, it's like, you know, sentenced to life without parole. It's kind of like the without parole part, like, it didn't really, like, register with me. And then it's like, wait a minute. Life without parole. This guy has no chance of ever getting. That's when, like, it started to weigh into me. Like, oh my god, that
he'll probably be in isolation a lot too, because he's a high profile inmate, and they're not going to want to stick him in with the masses, will they?
I would assume so. That's why I was discussing that with a couple coworkers today. That would be my assumption. I mean, he's been in solitary while this trial has been going on, so I would assume that trend would continue. I can't be 100% certain.
For sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets convicted of this double homicide in Boston. Like, I think that would be enough to deem him extremely, extremely high profile and dangerous. And at that point, if he's not already, he'd definitely be in solitary for good.
Yeah.
Bad
crazy
dude.
Situation, man. Crazy situation.
Bad dude.
From what I hear, the Robert Kraft testimony had a lot of influence on the jury. Because he's like...
What did Kraft say?
You know, it's... I don't even know if it's necessarily what he said. It's the fact that it was him, such a high-profile member of the New England community, saying something like this. Because, like, from what I was hearing from Michelle Steele, she was, like... Basically, she was the ESPN reporter who was covering this case from its inception. She was basically saying that, like, when Robert Kraft took the bench the other day, that just the jury was just, like, all ears, like, just on pins and needles. Like, they were listening, taking every word he had to say to heart. And they believed every word he had to say about the situation. And that, from what I've heard, that had a lot to do with their decision.
Patriots get another ring. Aaron Hernandez gets life in jail.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Like, if he just would have kept his hands clean, dude, Patriots would have been even tougher to beat. I mean, you can't deny that he is. He was a great tight end. And him and Gronk together, like, they were planning on doing that. Like, this was a system that they had set up that Belichick and Kraft were comfortable with. But you know what? Patriots organization gets crapped on a lot. They wasted absolutely no time, and rightfully so, but they wasted no time in being like, okay, yeah, we don't know if you're innocent or you're guilty, whatever. You are being charged with murder. We're done with you. Despite the contract, despite all the money, like, we want no part of this. We are washing ourselves clean of this as soon as we can. And I think you got to tip the cap a little bit. I mean, agreed. I'm a fan of a franchise that felt it necessary to try and reinstate a child abuser one weekend after deciding he wasn't fit to play. So I think I got to tip the cap to Kraft and the Patriots organization for
By the way, Roger Goodell this morning announced that Aaron Hernandez is suspended for 4 games.
That was a good one. Did you read that joke somewhere?
Yeah.
I was like, well, yeah, everybody at work was making that,
that
joke.
Was hilarious.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's the first time I heard that one.
That was hilarious.
Oh, man. He gave him a 4-game suspension.
I think he even said that. I think it was like 2. I think that's what the joke was.
Iron Roger. Holy.
Yeah, Iron Roger indeed.
Jeez Louise.
Fear of God in those players. I can commit murder. I'll only be on the bench four games, though.
I shot somebody, so I'm going to be on the bench for a week, but it's no big deal.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. We don't need to waste everyone's time covering that.
Screw that scumbag.
Or poking light at murder. That's not what we were doing. The way Roger Goodell operates, you know, it's not a far cry to imagine. Well, it is, but I mean, it, you know.
No, we were poking fun at Goodell, not murder.
Oh, absolutely.
And a man well worth poking fun of.
Agreed. Okay, let's move on to some somewhat belated news, but we've been off for the past week, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it. Kentucky did not win.
They did not.
NCAA championship. Kudos, nor did they even go to the national championship game.
Yeah, kudos to you guys for predicting that, because I didn't.
I'll do my best Skip Bayless here. I said since the beginning of this podcast that Kentucky could not win it undefeated.
Hold on
and
to the
I
courage
was
of my
right.
convictions.
Yeah, and I was right.
Well, but you know, it went down exactly the way we thought. Wisconsin was really the only team in the nation, I felt like. I mean, obviously we didn't get a chance to see if Kentucky would have beaten Wisconsin, how they would have been able to match up with Duke, but toe-to-toe, I felt like Wisconsin was the team to... We both felt that way. We felt like Wisconsin was the team that was built to beat that kind of squad. Yeah. Like, that's what you needed. You needed a lot of sharpshooters on the outside and a guy like Frank that you can move in and out and try to get Cauley-Stein to fatigue and to get, you know, to get tired. And tip the cap, Sam Decker. That kid's clutch. I don't think he's going to... I mean, I don't see him being elite at the NBA level by any stretch of the imagination, but he will find a job coming off the bench and knocking down big shots. He'll
settle into like a Shane Battier role.
Absolutely, that's a great analogy. Absolutely, I could totally see Sam Decker doing the Shane Battier thing, and I could see him doing it for lots of different. I could see him getting moved around a lot, not because he's bad, but because he's an asset. He's, you know. When you can shoot like that, you become a gun for hire, and they'll move you around. And
plus, he's tall, and he can get the boards.
Oh,
so.
I wanted to ask you. Okay, I love Bo Ryan. I love Bo Ryan. I'm a big, obviously, Minnesota Gophers fan. I love the Big Ten. Love Bo Ryan. You can say whatever you want about the calls in the championship game, Duke, Wisconsin, whatever. I did not think that was awfully bright, it seemed very out of character for Bo Ryan to go after the officials the way he did. I don't know. At one point, because when you've got a 9-point lead with, what was it? There was like 4 to go?
Something like that.
Like, you got a 9-point lead. Like, you got to just hang on. Like, I'm sorry. In the national championship game, like, you got to do it. So I don't know. I saw highlights.
Well, you got to make shots down the stretch. Absolutely. Like, you're not going to hang on against Duke. You're going to continue attacking the bucket.
But
and
to go after the officials, like I don't know.
I mean, I don't agree with him going after the officials. But
like, when you,
hey,
you watched the game from beginning to end, did you think that the officials deserve – did you think that they deserved that kind of criticism at the podium at the end of the game from Bo Ryan? Because I didn't feel that way.
And at the podium at the end of the game? No, in a different situation, yeah, because they made some bad calls on both ends of the floor. Like for against both teams, they made some bad calls and some uncharacteristically bad calls for the tournament. Like this was a weird year for the tournament. Like the UCLA three pointer that was called a goaltend and probably shouldn't have been, but maybe should have been. And then some of this stuff in the Wisconsin and Duke game, I don't know. It was a little bit of a sloppy tournament.
But
for...
even Wisconsin, I mean, Wisconsin got some calls in the Kentucky game for sure that got them to the big game. That shot clock violation that was missed in the Kentucky game.
Yeah, that was pretty big.
That was huge. So
Notre Dame getting charged with the blocking foul instead of getting a charge.
Absolutely.
In that Kentucky game, that could have made things go differently too. Yeah, it was a tough tournament for officiating, I would say. But I think that's something you talk about down the road. You don't call it out especially as a head coach. I don't think you call it out right after a game, especially if you're as high profile and as well respected as Bo Ryan is. I think that's just something you need to leave off the table until a later date when you can have a discussion with the
Well, and it's also like it's his first. Again, Bo Ryan's great head coach, obviously allowed to have whatever opinion he wants to have on the officiating. But you get to your first national title game, you beat the only undefeated squad, the only squad to go. What did they go? They were the first team ever to go 38-0. Yeah, so. You beat them. You got to the big game. You played your heart out. Your boys played their hearts out. Battled Duke as much as you could. And, yeah, did the officials kind of let him play a little bit, you know? But that's not abnormal, I don't feel like.
No.
Like, in big games like this, like, you let defenders play a little bit more physical. Let them get up into the airspace a little bit more when guys are trying to shoot and make plays. So for him to go to the podium and say, it's a shame that it had to end that way. No, it's not a shame. It was a good game.
And you were up 9.
You were up 9. You were winning that game, and that's.
You make a couple more shots in those last few minutes. You're not having this conversation.
I may sound just like a Minnesota guy that's trying to poo poo on anything Wisconsin. I'm not. If Wisconsin would have won that game, I'd have been like, I mean, shit. What am I going to say? That's been Wisconsin basketball, and it's been progressively getting better over the they've gone from being an elite Big Ten team to an elite team in general, to a team you can't sleep on.
That's true.
That come preseason, you're going to find them in the polls because of Bo Ryan. And so for him to stand up and say that and to really go after the officiating like that, I don't know. It irked me a little bit. I was a little disappointed because I really do like Bo Ryan a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best thing to do, but I'll let it slide. Heat of the moment, national championship game.
That's fair.
I would have probably done the same thing.
Fair.
Yeah, so Duke's the national champion.
Coach K.
Great job. Congrats to Coach K.
What number was that?
5?
National title number 5, right?
5, I believe.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
All right, quick question. The current, I'm just talking about, and this may be impossible to debate. Currently at the collegiate level, better coach, Nick Saban, Coach K.
I don't even know how to answer that question. Like I don't want to compare coaches from different sports. It's a completely different situation. Sure. College football, you play maybe 13 games a season. College basketball, you can play up to 40. So I just don't. I don't see a point.
It's like
in
comparing,
even debating
that. Pop to Belichick. You know, it's just like I don't know.
Fair enough. I mean, I guess I meant more.
They're certainly in the same league in terms of
In the way that they recruit, the way they handle their players, the way that their players conduct themselves on and off the court, that sort of thing. That's just
they'll both go down in history as
I didn't try to open some, it. Yeah.
They'll both go down in history as one of the best coaches in each of their respective
knock on
sports.
Wood.
No question.
Knock on wood. Hopefully there's no I'm always scared. I'm not gonna lie, man. Like after Joe Pa, I'm not worried about
Coach K.
Not at all. You don't think we'll ever find?
He's been around too long.
I
want to
say
he's been around too long. If someone was gonna come out, it would have come out already.
For sure. But it's so fucking scary now. Just because so often they let you down.
I mean, Calipari's got more shit under there. Don't get me started about that. And I can't. I don't know if I can say about Nick Saban or not. But I just have this feeling. Coach K, nope, not a thing. Okay, so yeah, congrats to Duke. Sad the season's over. I'm very much looking forward to next year, hoping that this was a good year for my my Butler Bulldogs. First year we've been to the NCAA tournament since Brad Stevens left. I hope that's a good sign. Hope we can come back next year and progress even further. Get back to those 2010-2011 days when we were fighting for the national championship.
Well,
but
the Gophers suck, so do the Twins, so do the Wolves.
All right, so moving on. Yeah, that'll do it for college basketball for us.
And apparently Minnesota sports
in all Minnesota is bad, man. It is dark in the Great White North. It's not great. Everything sucks. If we don't get the number one overall pick in the NBA.
You will.
Oh, I fucking... We never get it, though! Ever!
You will.
You know why? Because the NBA draft is rigged.
Okay.
I just wanted to see the conversation. I don't believe that. I don't believe the NBA draft is rigged. I just really wanted to say that just to see Tyler's face when I said it. That's all.
So. Steve, I want to ask you a question. Let's shift gears here.
Sure.
So Drew and I, a week and a half ago, we did our baseball opening day podcast.
Yes.
Obviously, he's a Twins fan, unfortunately, right now I'm a White Sox fan. You've started to get into a little Miami Marlins baseball. But this is sort of like, unless you were a fan of it when you were a kid, I think this is sort of like your first like. Foray, if you will, into MLB baseball. So,
yeah.
What do you think so far? 9 games in.
It kind of reminds me of hockey a little bit in the sense that it's so unpredictable. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, anything can happen in any given inning, just like in any period. You know, either team could blow up or just totally sink. So, that's what I've noticed so far. A lot of teams with reputations like the Yankees or the Red Sox, like I mm-hmm. carry those reputations that I know of. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because when you hear of a legendary team like the Yankees or the Red Sox or Giants or, you know, whoever, Dodgers, whatever, for some reason in the back of my mind, I always assume they're just going to win, you know, almost all the time. And as of late, you know, a lot of them haven't been winning a lot of games. So it just goes to show that, as the saying goes, any given Sunday, well, in baseball, I guess any given day, any one team, any one player can have a hell of a hit in the right time when the right players are on base. If there's enough guys on base, you can jump out and take the lead.
It's a really, really good time for baseball. And we talked about that on the opening day.
We did.
But the fun part is the AL East, where Red Sox Nation, Yankees, you know, they've largely been the top dogs the last few years. The past decade and a half. Well, now, teams like Baltimore are finding ways to compete. The Toronto Blue Jays are trying to find ways to compete. For the first time in a long time, the AL East is a little bit open. And you're finding now, we talked about it, like, the two teams that played in the World Series last year, they didn't win 90 games. And the Royals, who went in the AL, they came out of the Central, and through, like, two-thirds of the year, or half the year, they were only playing 500 baseball. So it's like you said, like it baseball is like a marathon, and team that gets hot at the right time, it can be really, really fun to watch. But lots of fun things.
The right pitch, the right hit, the right amount of guys on base, you know, it can win you the game.
Well, and you got a guy. It's fun that you're getting into it now, the way you're getting into it, because like when you got it, when you started to get into football, you were drawn to Cap.
And now I was drawn to Harbaugh, really.
Well, Harbaugh, but you know, on the play, I'm talking about player side of thing, definitely drawn to Cap. You've got a similar personality in Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah.
And he's a monster. And I read a really, really good article on him, and I loved it. I didn't know hardly anything other than the fact that he can hit the shit out of a baseball. I didn't know too much about this guy. And I guess when the Florida Marlins approached him, the Miami Marlins approached him in the offseason, the front office approached him about, you know, a mega contract. They showed him their first offer. I think there was actually more money, or it was bigger in some way than the contract he actually settled on. So they put that in front of him, and he's like, I was mad. I was insulted. Apparently he took it and he goes, if you guys think I'm just here to knock the ball around and make money and make you guys money, I'm not here for that. I'm not here for that at all. I'm here to win. I want to win. And all this money going to me is not going to build a better baseball team. And I love that.
Yeah.
Is it genuine? We don't know yet. He's still young. We'll see. That is an awesome mentality. And it's a mentality, especially in baseball, when you've got so many guys just, you know, when you got no salary cap, like, you know, owners don't care. They're just going to spend and spend and spend and spend. But a guy like that, that's like, no, we don't need to be doing that. We need to invest in what makes this team great and make a run out of it that way. I don't know.
Cap did that too, actually.
Absolutely.
Weirdly enough, he actually offered him more money, but he turned down to afford guys like Crabtree, have fun donning that silver and black. But yeah, I mean, like, that's actually kind of cool that, you know, both of them have that mentality that, you know,
absolutely. He's the antithesis. Stanton is the antithesis to Alex Rodriguez.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, like, kind of, you know, like discovering a sport for the, you know, the first time. It's always daunting, I think, because like when you first start out, you know, it's not just your team you need to learn. Sure. You need to learn the other teams, your division rivals, their histories. I mean, it took me a long time before I felt comfortable being able to talk about anything football related, but
and that's why I brought it up in the first place, cuz like it is interesting to like look at it through the eyes of someone who is just now getting into baseball. Because baseball's, I wouldn't consider it an easy sport to sort of just, like, pick up right away in terms of, like, learning. Like,
because
there's, like, a lot of weird statistics, like the BABIP, for example, like batting average per balls in play. Like that's a weird statistic. WHIP is a weird statistic for pitcher. Like, it's just it's a weird sport full of weird statistics, not even all of which I'm 100% like competent when it comes to.
Oh,
so
I'm not even remote. That's way too much math for me. That's way too much math.
Talk about a sport that's got a lot of advanced metrics, but it's those old school like baseball purists, man. They're all about that shit. And I just show me batting average, show me a guy's home runs, RBIs, runs and hits and on base percentage, then show me a pitcher's ERA, strikeouts and walks ratio, and I'll be good.
Absolutely.
If my pitcher's winning, then I know things are going well.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's exciting to view it through your eyes. So that's why I brought it up, because I want to bring it up like once a week or so and just be like, so where are you at? Like, what are you feeling? Like, what did you learn this week that you liked? What aren't you really into? Because I've never really gotten to do that with someone. Because as far as I'm concerned, people that I know, they've either loved baseball their entire life, or they have no interest in learning anything about it. So I'm going to be curious as we go over the course of this 162-game season
I really like about this, and I can't say this about hockey, basketball, or football, is that I feel relaxed about this sport.
Right,
okay.
I never feel
overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed, and I know it's the start of the season, so it's easy to say, well, Steve, you know, it's the start of the season, so you don't have anything to worry about yet. But mm-hmm. I, even so, I don't, like, there's no tension. There's no, like, anxiety that I feel. I feel like, you know, with baseball, you know, like, just enjoy the game, relax, you know, it's all good.
So awesome.
But that's why I like it.
Is that where you know? But that's the thing, dude. Like, that's where you're at right now. But the tension just builds.
It always does.
So slow, and it's different in baseball. To me, it's a different kind of build. Like, because eventually things will just start heating up here. And oh, and real quick, like, side note. Mike Redmond is still the manager of the Miami Marlins, correct? I believe so.
They were talking about this on First Take.
Dude,
this morning.
I love Mike Redmond.
He is.
Former backup catcher for the Minnesota Twins. Hilarious. Super great personality. Really cut and dry. Like, okay, so like back in his playing days, let's say like Twins are slumping. Dumpster fire. Nobody's hitting. They drop like four in a row or something like that. Or they're sitting back in the middle of standings. This is a guy that will strip down absolutely butt-ass naked and walk around the fucking clubhouse. Just to lighten up. Like, just to get guys cracking up and lighten up and that kind of thing. I don't know if he's going to do that as a manager. But I'm just giving you insight. Like
Miami.
And this dude knows baseball. And he's a great, great leader. Great clubhouse guy. I remember him being Joe Mauer's backup and just... Like, you never really got to see him play because Joe was getting... But if Joe had to DH for a game or something like that, then you'd have Mike behind the plate. Oh, my God. That guy's freaking hilarious.
I mean, like, so far, it's like there's no... there's no pain in watching baseball, you know. Like, no. I mean, with basketball, I mean, hockey there is a little bit, but with basketball and football especially, there's always so much like just pain and agony, just going over all the plays you could have done or could have prevented in order to get yourself the win. With this, it's just like, you know, so far it's just like, you know, we're in the fifth inning, you know, got four more innings to go. Let's just kick back and relax. So I actually appreciate that about baseball as opposed to any other sport that I like.
Absolutely.
Doesn't have that. I'm never relaxed watching basketball or hockey or football. I'm never relaxed. It's killer.
Really?
It's killer.
I didn't know that.
But
yeah,
with baseball, we
didn't know that about you, buddy.
I honestly, like, if we had baseball here, like, let's say the Marlins are playing right now, I just
kick back.
Oh, they just got two on us. It's fine.
It's fun, dude.
I'm going to be interested to see you post All-Star break because that's kind of when things start really heating up. Like, that's when more trades start happening. That's when people are, like, gearing up
playoff
to make that playoff push.
Yep.
Well, kind of like the Royals did last year. So,
I said, it's the beginning. So there's a lot of baseball, you know, left
absolutely.
To go. So maybe the reason why I'm so laid back is because I don't really have a lot of expectations. You know,
that's
probably
fair.
Why.
That's fair.
It is. It could be that, but baseball's such a great slow burn. Like if it gets to a point, and I hope it does, because it isn't going to get this way for the Twins. I don't know if it'll get this way for the White Sox, but it won't
probably
get this
not.
Way for me. So there's a possibility. Down the stretch here, you know, Marlins, if they're in, like, you know, they're two games back or two games ahead, and who are they going to have to fight off? Who are they going to have to stay with? Like, that's when you start seeing, okay, maybe these 162 games, maybe all of them really do matter. Because, you know, if you lose, like, and that's what's super awesome about a wild card, and now a second wild card spot, is missing out on postseason by, like, a game. Like, you look back at the 162 you played, you couldn't win one more. You couldn't do two
the
or
Oakland
three
A's.
More things. Exactly. Exact. Great point. Brought in John Lester. Thought they had it in the bag. Thought they were good to go.
Went on a slump. Had to play the Royals in the wild card, and Royals
had
took it.
Had to play the hottest, youngest team in baseball.
It's
fun to watch.
It
I
is
love
fun
watching
to watch.
Shit like that, man.
I wanted to bring up one more point, and then, like I said, like, yeah, every week or, like, every few episodes, I'll just be like, hey, Steve, so, like, what are you feeling these days? Like, what's, like, it's just nice to, get that perspective from someone who's just getting into the game. But I did want to bring up probably my favorite thing, discussion we've had about baseball in the past couple weeks was when you, Steve, and I were, we were in the car the other day. And we're driving to go eat or whatever. And you're just talking to me. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, Marlins had a rough first week. But you go, hey, I don't know. What? We still got, like, what, 80-something games left to go? And I go, you got, like, 157 left to go. And you just stop and look at me. And you go, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, how,
like,
many do we have
he's
left?
Like, how many? He's like, Steve goes, how many games are in a season? And I go, 162, pal. And you're just like, what? What? How? How? That's just it ridiculous. I'm like, dude, mind. They play like 4 or 5 games a week, man.
It's crazy.
See, and that's the thing is, like, I get on, like, I get, you know, kind of pissy when, you know, I've gotten pissy when, like, Joe Mauer has bilateral leg weakness and he's missing games here and there. But at the end of the day, like, it's 162 games.
Yeah.
And the travel schedule's brutal. It's brutal.
And catchers and pitchers just have it the worst, hell man. Yeah.
Oh,
especially
man.
Catchers.
Oh, absolutely. 100% agree.
Squatting for 120 pitches every night.
And that's why, like, I'm not going to lie, this is kind of way old news, but when they decided to implement the rule about crashing into catchers, I was not super disappointed.
Nope. I don't mind that at all.
I know everybody, like, old school baseball people, oh, I love collisions of play. Well, yeah, you know, I do too. But they're exciting. That being said, I don't have to take that kind of beating.
I don't want my catcher going down because of a collision at a play at the plate. I don't want that shit. Agree.
You know what's actually interesting now that I think about it, is that the baseball is obviously the last sport I'm getting into, and yet that was the first sporting event I ever went to in my life was a Florida Marlins game when I was 7.
Oh,
I was thinking about that. I was like, you know what?
Wait, when you're 7? That was 1997 or you're
96.
It was 96, 97.
So that was their World Series club.
It was early 97. It was late 96 or early 97 because they hadn't won the World Series
so
yet.
So did you get to see Miguel Cabrera?
Probably did. Actually, no. Yeah, I did, actually.
You got to see one of the greatest hitters of our
era. My Uncle Dave took me. My Uncle Dave, I remember vividly, my Uncle Dave picked me up after school. We went down there. And that was back when the Marlins were playing in Joe Robbie Stadium where the Dolphins were playing.
Right. I guess I don't know. You probably don't remember who started that game.
Oh, God.
Dude, Josh Beckett was a part of that team, too?
Those names sound very, very familiar to me, man.
He was.
He was a rookie. That was a great
team. That's a great squad to go to your first sporting event for.
I remember having the little shirt too, 1997, you know, World Champions.
Oh, that's really cool.
I had that shirt when I was little.
That's really cool.
The 2003 World Series, I remember that one a lot more vividly.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But the 97 one, that was the first sporting event I ever went to. It was in Joe Robbie Stadium when the Marlins still played with the Dolphins in Joe Robbie Stadium.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah,
that
is really
cool.
And yet, ironically, it's the last, you know, team that I invest in.
For sure.
That's really cool, man. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm excited. That's why I wanted to talk about that for a little bit. I just wanted to get your thoughts going this first.
I appreciate
not
it
even
relaxing.
2 weeks of the season. It's gonna be, it's gonna be a long one for us in the AL
God.
Central.
Oh my!
But you know what's so cool? Because not even get into so it today. That's the great thing about it to me. It's just like when you said there's 162 games. It's like, oh my God! You know that means there's. Almost every day, there's some sort of, there's a game going on. You know, like not like with the basketball having 82 games.
I mean, hockey, too, 82 games.
Yeah, hockey, 82. It's like, you know, that in itself is like, damn, that's a lot of games. But, like, it still isn't enough. I love basketball. I love hockey. Especially basketball. I wish it could go on all year. But knowing there's 162, I mean, she's like, my God. I mean, that's... It's almost 2 games away from doubling basketball and hockey. She's like, oh my God. That's so many games.
Yeah, man.
Jesus. Almost every day. So it's like, you know, even if they're like, oh, man, today sucked at work. But hey, Marlins are playing later, you know.
See? And I used to love that about baseball. But now the Twins are hideous. They are so gross. They are, okay. Not gonna
so
get
are the White Sox.
Wild playoff hockey.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk a little Twins-White Sox on Sunday or something. But gross. I haven't had a good enough day to get into those two teams right now. All right, yeah, we got to get into a few minutes of NHL and NBA previews, but first, we got to get to my favorite segment, 51 questions.
Sweet. Sweet.
We haven't done this in a couple weeks, so to refresh you guys.
Question for me.
Steve Cravens.
Yes.
Bringing up the rear with 2 points.
Yeah.
Drew Willers, tied for first with 3 points.
Indeed.
With our man, Christian Schneider, 3 points.
Yeah, he's a...
So, we're doing 2 questions tonight because we've been off for a minute and we got to start making a move on these questions.
For sure.
Yeah, well, Christian's not here tonight, so, he's missing out.
His team won the Super Bowl, it's all good.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's fine.
All right, guys. So, in honor of both the NBA and NHL playoffs kicking off this week, I'm going to do 2 questions. One NBA related, one NHL related. Which one do you want? Wow. Excuse me. Which one do you guys want first?
Hockey?
Let's go hockey. Why not?
All right.
This is going to suck.
Are you guys familiar with The Trade?
The Trade. I believe... Okay. This could be super bad for me to take a guess at this.
All right, just don't, because you might spoil it for yourself.
Oh, okay.
The Trade of 1988.
No.
Wayne Gretzky.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. From Rangers to LA, right?
Wait. Remember when I just said don't say anything because you might spoil
Wait,
it for yourself?
Wait, I didn't know it was. Like, you asked me if I was familiar with what it was.
Well, one, you're wrong. So two, I have to scratch this question now.
Damn it, was it the Oilers?
Yes, it was.
Damn it, I would have gotten it too. Damn it.
Well, give Steve a point and take a point away from me.
No, I'm not giving Steve a point for that.
Thanks, Todd.
All right, I've got a backup NHL question.
All
right. This is not player related. It is rink related.
Oh.
So, in a standard NHL rink, how many spots, how many face-off spots are in a standard NHL rink? I will give you four choices.
All right.
3, 5, 7, or 9.
Can I go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm trying to, like, picture a rink from, like, a bird's eye view. I'm going to say 5. 5 feels right to me.
9.
Oh, boy.
Nice job, Steve.
Yeah,
Steve,
say,
it's 9. It is 9.
Yeah, okay.
5 in the neutral zone and 2 in both attacking, both the attacking and defensive zones.
That's what I thought. All right.
So what was going to be the original question?
The original question was the trade of 1988 sent Wayne Gretzky to the Los Angeles Kings from what team? It's going to be the Canucks, the Oilers, the Rangers, or the Penguins.
Oh, yeah.
And the answer was the Oilers.
I didn't, yeah.
Yeah, he found out moments after winning the Stanley Cup from his father that he had been shopped around for months during the season to the...
You still could have asked that one, though. I didn't spoil it.
No, but I already had to refute one of the four answers because one of the four answers, possible answers, was the Rangers.
Oh.
It's all right. I got it right.
Fair enough, man.
Now go. Well, all right. So that was the clusterfuck of a first question.
You're welcome.
So Steve gets a point.
At home.
All three of you guys are officially tied. And now for the NBA question.
It's about to break right here.
Since the NBA-ABA merger in 1976, which team has the most consecutive seasons going to the playoffs? Four choices. It's the Lakers. It's the Blazers. Is it the Celtics? Or is it the Bulls?
You said the merger in 76.
Since the NBA-ABA merger in 1976... Who has the most consecutive playoff appearances?
Most consecutive.
You want those choices again?
Blazers, Celtics.
Nah, because I know it comes down to two.
Blazers, Lakers, Celtics, Bulls.
Oh, jeez Louise. Louise. I am going to have to go with the Showtime Lakers. I'm going to go with the Lakers.
Okay.
Go with the Celtics. It's got to be the Celtics. It has to be.
See, I thought that. The thing that gets me about it is no, that's the thing that gets me, though, is like when the merger happened.
Okay.
Yeah, what is it?
It's got to be.
Drew, you went with the Lakers?
That's what I went with. Yeah, I'm going with the Lakers.
Celtics. Steve, you went with the Celtics.
Got to be. Right?
See, that it seemed too obvious to me for it to be the Celtics. Like, I don't know why.
You know what's funny? They're both too obvious. It's the Portland Trail Blazers.
What?
No way. Really? Mm-hmm. That's sweet. That's a good one. That's
Damn.
A really good
I
one.
I thought it was the Celtics.
The Blazers. Wow.
Yep.
And did you have the numbers on it? Like
21.
21 consecutive seasons.
How many titles?
Damn, dude. That's a good one. Shit. Oh, well.
I thought it was the Celtics.
All right.
Well, fucked up that one.
Damn, that was a good question. Well, I would not have gotten any of them right. I just felt like I was like, you're right. It was between two. It was either Lakers or Celtics, right?
That's what I thought. I mean,
the Blazers. I suppose it makes sense, though. Like, Clyde the Glide.
I didn't even think they were a fact. I know they've been to a lot of playoff appearances, obviously, but I mean, like, consecutive. Yeah.
That's a great question. Good one.
From 83 to 2003.
That is nuts. They made the playoffs every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smoly, Rocky. That's got to be tough.
How many titles do they have?
Like, it'd be tough to watch your team go to the postseason.
Three? I'm going
to
look that up.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Those Blazers cost me a point.
I was
going
to say, as a Wolves fan, I know, like, when Flip took over in, like, what, 95, 96, he had him going every year up until, like, 2000. I'm just spitballing, but, like, 04, 05 or something like that.
To 03.
03, that was...
Yeah, that was the... Then they missed the playoffs after that.
No, I'm talking about the...
the Wolves. No, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the Blazers.
No, I was just saying, like, I was empathizing with Blazers. That's got to be super frustrating to watch your team go that many times and not win it. That many single, like, consecutive times. Like, consecutively, you're there, and you can't get over the hump.
One NBA championship.
Yeah.
And three conference titles.
Hey, man. Whatever, they got one.
20 goddamn times, man. And 21 times in a row, and you only win it once.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I knew the Celtics-Lakers thing might trip you guys up. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked that one.
I kept on thinking of Bill Russell. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's like 11 titles right there.
No, absolutely. The thing that got me about the Bill Russell thing, though, is he said since the merger, and the merger was in 76. I don't think Russell, like...
Well, no, that was... You know what? That could have been a little riddle there, because that, like, in each... Usually in every riddle, there's a thing right there, right in front of your face. Against, and that was it.
Sure. Yep.
Bill Russell's pre-1970. Well, yeah, he is, but... I mean, that tripped me up.
Yeah, that was a good one. So we're all tied up.
Yeah.
Balls.
3-3-3. All three of you guys. I'll have another question for you on Sunday. Moving on. We're running long. So let's spend a few minutes on the NBA playoffs, even though literally no one in this room has a team going to the playoffs. But
it's all good.
But Christian does, somehow, thanks to the magic of my man Brad Stevens.
You're not going far, Christian. I'll talk with you about that when you get back.
Well, I mean, let's just start there. Boston is the 7th seed. Who the fuck knew?
Not me.
Like, who really saw that coming?
You kind of did. You kind of did. You, in a weird way, you said when Phoenix traded away Isaiah Thomas, you said, you're like, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
He's a baller.
Yeah.
And he's balled out.
He's been averaging... Damn, about near 20 points a game for Boston.
When he daggered Phoenix in his first visit back.
Like, oh, he stuck it to him. That was the epitome of an FU game. I haven't seen that good of an FU game since Rondo in Boston on national TV after they didn't give him a bigger contract.
If I'm Jeff Hornacek, there's no way you could have wanted that, right? Like, there's no way he could have won. Like, how, as a coach in the NBA with a young guy like that with that much talent, like, unless they just didn't get along at all.
I just don't think he was. I just don't think he was gelling in that offense. From what I've heard, I don't watch a lot of Phoenix Suns basketball, but I just don't think he was gelling in that offense.
There's a lot of weird stuff going in the Suns locker room. I mean.
Going tragically.
Look at Dragic. He wasn't happy either. He dipset maneuvered.
That was weird.
Yeah, Boston, man. Yeah, well, we love to talk about coaches on here. What Brad Stevens did, I mean, it's incredible. Not an eighth seed, you know, a seventh seed. And a lot of people, that's just one more. But still, that's pretty incredible to come back. I mean, they were irrelevant with a capital I for most of the season. And then just to come out of nowhere and beat a lot of teams that a lot of people, myself included, would have been like, they have no chance of winning that. To win it. Whether it be by a point or by 10, it doesn't matter. They won it. So it's
and after sending Rondo out the door, too.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Pretty impressive.
Oh, I mean, that was the best thing they could have done was to free up his spot.
That's crazy. Because
he didn't want to play there anymore anyway. And he's past his prime. I'm sorry. Rondo's not that great.
No, I completely agree. When you're – whether it's true or not true, whatever, to admit that you haven't played, that you were not playing defense – the past however many years, like he did after arriving in Dallas, like him being like, well, I gotta figure out how to play defense again. I haven't been playing it in quite a long time. It's like, really, dude? Seriously?
He's a very, like, I used to have a huge love for Rondo, and I've just, like, completely lost all interest in that.
I never really liked him that much. I thought he was dirty. I didn't like him throwing Kirk Heinrich into the scorers table. Thought that was dirty. I've never really cared for Rondo.
D-Wade broke his arm. That was great.
Never been a big Rondo.
Accident
dude.
Or not, it's still fucking. Yeah, but, I mean, I have no love. I mean, listen. Yeah, I mean, every once in a while it might appear that, you know, I'm sucking the Patriots' dick every once in a while, but I have no love for the Celtics, the Bruins. I mean, like, the Celtics, I have no love for them, but you know what? I don't feel bitter giving them praise for where they are now. It's like, that is well-earned. I don't care if it's from a rival or anything like that. That is a well-earned playoff
Agreed.
Spot they secured. I mean, that Brad Stevens, I mean, that's incredible.
It may sound like I'm being a homer because he's from, like, my Butler Bulldogs originally, but you got to at least put him on the Coach of the Year ballot. Like, you don't – you don't give him Coach of the Year, but he's got to be on the ballot. He's got to be up for consideration. Like, he's in the top five.
I would agree.
But why would you say you wouldn't give it to him?
Because you got to give it to the man who won, what, 66 games? 65 games, you got to give it to Steve Kerr.
I mean, look at the talent he has versus, you know.
I completely agree with what you're saying, but at the end of the day, what, it's still a 37-45 team, 38-44 team.
I know, yeah.
Like, no, you got to give it to the guy that broke the 60 win mark in his first ever coaching stint. Like, that's. That's unrivaled.
And has
to
a,
me.
What is it? A 10-game edge over everybody else in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. And Christ. You got to take into account the decision. You know, I guess it's not really a decision. I was reading an article in Sports Illustrated about how when he came in, he had a plan, and one of the toughest things he thought one of his toughest sells was going to be to convince Andre Iguodala to come off of the bench. That he needed to be a role player. And I think something can be said about his ability to coach a team and getting a guy. Like, I'm not saying Iguodala is like a superstar or anything.
No, but
like
Iggy had a resurgence this year. Like, he was only averaging like 9 points last year under Mark Jackson.
Generally, that's a guy that would be starting on a lot of NBA teams. He'd be starting in the Wolves for sure. I think he'd be starting in the Pacers, would he not?
No.
You don't think so? Okay.
I mean, maybe this year in an injured-riddled team.
No, but that's
injury-riddled
no,
team,
but
not on a normal year.
No. I'm not talking. I'm talking about just like this year.
Oh,
we're
okay,
talking about
yeah.
Coach of the Year.
Yeah, no,
year.
He'd start this year, but
yeah, he would
not
start.
On.
He would start in the Heat, would he not?
Probably.
I
mean,
nah,
the,
I don't know.
The Heat's a walking.
Now that
hospital.
They have Goran Dragic, I'm not so sure about that. But like he
pre-Goran Dragic, yeah, probably.
Yeah. So I think there's something to be said about that. You guys watch more basketball than I do, but I've always known.
Iggy's past his prime. He's not what he was on the 76ers.
Completely agree, 100%. But
he's still a solid player, and he's a good guy off the bench. Like
I like the way
Steve Kerr's been using. I just like the way Steve Kerr's been running this entire offense. Like, they run competent teams out of the building. They make them look like they're high school kids. Like it's insane. You saw the crossover on Chris Paul the other night.
That was insane.
Steph Curry made Chris Paul look like he's never played defense a day in his life. And Chris Paul is not a bad defender at all.
No.
Steph Curry made him look like he's an 18-year-old kid trying out for the D League. Like, good Lord. It's just...
Steph Curry's on a level. He's on another level.
If they don't win the NBA championship this year... It's a failed season.
Yeah,
They're that good.
Totally.
It's not enough, we got a rookie coach and we won 60-plus games. Oh, that's fantastic. But you had the clientele to go all the way, and if you don't go all the way, you failed.
Yeah.
Just like Kentucky. They failed.
Devil's advocate real quick. Completely agree. But devil's advocate, Spurs in their last, what, 23 games? They've gone, what, 20-3 or something
like
that?
They've won their last 11.
They're getting hot at the right time. Like,
and to be fair,
11 out of 12 they lost tonight.
So would you
to be
consider-
fair? So are the Clippers. 13 out of their last 14.
Spurs are not winning at all.
Okay.
Nope.
They're not.
So
they're gonna break down.
So you would consider it a failure if the Spurs met them in the Western Conference Finals and the Spurs beat them.
Yeah.
Based upon how hot the Spurs are.
The Spurs' age and how many injuries they've had to deal with, and Kawhi still, I'm still not sure if he's 100%. If the Warriors don't take it to them, it's a failed season.
Yeah.
They should be beating anyone because they've beat everyone this year. They've just run dudes up and down the court. There's no reason they shouldn't win the championship this year. I don't want to hear the Steve Kerr is inexperienced in the playoffs. Of course he's inexperienced in the playoffs. He was inexperienced from game one because he's never coached an NBA team before. But guess what? He won 60 plus games.
And he's talking. Him and his players are seeing eye to eye. I mean, that's the most important thing for a coach. As long as you get, like, it's incredible. A rookie coach earns the respect of his locker room like that.
Well, the cool part about it is, like, I guess I read when he was looking to be a head coach, like, when he thought he was ready to be a head coach in this last offseason, before he was hired by the Warriors, he basically sat down at his computer, made a Word document that was how to be a coach. And he basically just pulled things from his tenure in the NBA. He played with the Spurs. What did he like from Pop? He played for the Bulls. What did he like about what Phil did?
God.
And it was paid, before you knew it, it was hundreds of pages, this Word document. He compiled it all into a PowerPoint. So when teams brought him in to an interview about what would make him a great head coach, boom, all up in there, organized in a PowerPoint. Not only that, I guess with the Warriors front office specifically, he went literally player, almost, they said verbatim, player by player, this is what I want to do, this is how I want to use him, this is why. And it was a no-brainer for the Warriors. Like, it was no-brainer for him at all. And so, yeah, man.
He could and should win it all in his first year coaching.
Be pretty cool.
I was a big proponent that Mark Jackson was unfairly fired.
But me?
I still completely stand by that. But I was also, and I'm willing to admit this, I wasn't a big proponent of thinking that Steve Kerr was going to be able to improve on what Mark Jackson did in his first year. 100% wrong, and I'll eat crow on that. I adore Mark Jackson, but I absolutely adore what Steve Kerr has been able to do over the course of 82 games. And even if it takes, what would that be? Four rounds? Even if it takes 28 games, even if they have to go 7 games every series, I think he can still get it done in 28 or less games. I think he deserves, the Warriors deserve to win the championship. They've got to play the way they've been playing for the majority of this season over the course of the next few weeks.
Yeah,
sounds like from what I also heard in, read in the exact same article, it's a really great article on Kerr and the Warriors, but same article, they talked about Mark Jackson being an excellent coach within the confines of the locker room, but it sounds like pretty much everywhere else in the building, he was really tough to get along with.
Mm.
Really, really mm-hmm. tough. Like he, like when
I mean,
sounds like another guy I know.
Well, no, but like when what's his face? Oh shoot, I'm so embarrassed that I'm blanking on the name. The first openly gay player in the NBA played for the Nets.
Yeah, now you're putting me on the spot.
I know, right?
I don't know either.
I'm making us all look terrible.
Well, anyway, what's the point?
But yeah, apparently when he came out and he was playing in the NBA, somebody had approached Mark Jackson about how he felt about that, and he goes, "Oh, Jason Collins."
Jason Collins.
I know Jason Collins really, really well, and I'm praying for him and I'm praying for his family. And they're like, "Oh, you're praying for him. Like, this is a big problem." Well, one of the front office, like an executive or somebody else who works in the front office of the Warriors, is also openly gay. And I guess when trying to kind of like speak on it with Mark was not very open. And
interesting.
Was
I didn't
trying
hear that.
To that said executive, blanking on the name, I could go find the article, but that said executive said that Jackson was, quote, trying to educate him on And so there was just
interesting.
It wasn't like the article was like, this is why Kerr is great and why Mark Jackson.
No.
They definitely gave. And Kerr even in the article was like, there isn't a whole lot. Like, there's a lot of talent on this team. There isn't a whole lot I have to do. But it sounds like it was never really an issue of X's and O's with Mark Jackson. It sounds.
I mean, I never thought that it was.
Think that it, like, him getting fired is. You know,
it's a shocker.
Tyler and I were talking about this because if correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't his firing happen the day after the Warriors lost to the Clippers last year? Yeah, I mean, like, after watching that series, I mean, me and Tyler were just like, what the hell?
Well, and they had been talking about it for, like, before the playoffs began. Like, my now defunct personal blog, like, I wrote a big piece on that, like, before the playoffs even started, and I was just like, look, there's no reason we should even be talking about Mark Jackson getting fired. And while I obviously completely disagree if Mark Jackson had any semblance of trying to educate an openly gay person, I have no respect for what he was trying to do if he did that. I still don't think you can constitute firing someone over their beliefs.
Sure.
As long as they're not doing anything to hurt or be a detriment to anyone else in the front office, and maybe he was. I don't know the full story because I didn't even know that until today.
Well, there was nothing in the article about, like, Mark being, you know, he wasn't like a bigot or anything.
Yeah, no, and I didn't think that he was.
It just sounds like, and the other thing, they also said what makes Steve Kerr different from Mark Jackson is Steve knew exactly who he wanted out of his assistants. He knew exactly who he wanted. Mark Jackson was terrified of his assistants if they were doing really well. He was terrified, apparently, of them overtaking him.
Interesting.
You know, it was things like that.
Well, at the end of the day, like, obviously, Mark Jackson had a great personnel under him, coaching-wise and player-wise, and maybe it just wasn't the right situation for him. Clearly, it wasn't, but clearly it's the right situation for Steve Kerr, and that's fantastic. Let's get back on point real quick. All right, so, I don't know. Let's just, who's your pick out of the East? Who's your pick out of the West? Who's going to the NBA Finals? After all is said and done, after all this rigmarole of these first couple rounds, who's going to the NBA Finals? All
right. In the West, I'm picking the Warriors. They're just, but I'm also scared of the Warriors too, because I think they could have Kentucky syndrome. But in the East, I actually think, this might be controversial, and I might regret saying this later. I know the common sense answer is to say the Cavs. All arrows are pointing at the Cavs. That said, I'm not quite ready. Assuming he can stay healthy, I'm not quite ready to give up on the Bulls yet. I'm not quite ready because after watching them play their last couple of games, that hunger and that
they
fire.
They looked on point.
Yeah, I mean that. And I'll go ahead and say this: the Miami Heat were up on them 19 points at the start of the third quarter. We blew it, and we lost by 11.
Yeah.
You know what team does that? A team that's fucking hungry. A team that's hungrier than the other team. A team that's not going to be, you know, happy making it to the playoffs and then going away in the first round. I actually think that they've been to this dance before. They went to that dance against us. They lost big time. They don't want to do that again. And moreover, there's a lot of players on that team that don't want to go through that again to LeBron.
Oh, they'll get physical. Like, Joe Kim Noah is going to be big. Yeah. If we're lucky enough to get that series, I will say that Bulls are not afraid to knock around LeBron. They're not afraid to get physical with him.
Or his inexperienced cronies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see Kyrie in the playoffs. I don't even give a fuck about Kevin Love. He's not going to do anything.
No, he's not. Kyrie, though? Kyrie's going to be the difference maker.
Yeah, if Kyrie can be competent every single game and be good, be a 25-8 guy every night, then they're going to the finals. If he falters a couple games in a row, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Kyrie. There's some days where he is just clutch city. Then there's other games where he is just choking.
Yeah.
Like, just choking. You can see it on his face. He's just like, you know, his eyes. You can see it. Like, the look in his eyes was just like, God, I don't know why I'm not making these shots. And he starts freaking out. You can see it. But then there's the other nights where he's just cool as the other side of the pillow, as Stuart Scott would say.
He's scoring 50-plus points like he was playing against his 2-year-old kid. Yeah, I don't even know if he has a kid.
So that's what, and I actually think because he's never been in a situation in the finals, I could easily see, especially, I'm going to go ahead and say this. When your coach is a puppet, and that's what he is, Tyler, you could call me disrespectful, but when your coach is a puppet to LeBron.
Call you disrespectful, I completely agree with you.
There's a lot of people consider me disrespectful for calling any coach a puppet just because they have the title of coach. I'm sorry. That's what he is.
David Blatt is... I've said things about Eric Spoelstra in the past. I've even said a couple things about Frank Vogel when he was his first season, and Scott Brooks to a lesser extent. None of them would ever even come close to what David Blatt is. David Blatt doesn't even call his own plays, dude. Like, David Blatt, if there's one coach I'm going to agree with you on about him being a puppet, it's David Blatt. So you go ahead and continue
he's
exactly
a puppet.
What you're saying.
That's what he is. In situations like this, when you make it all the way to the let's call it the Eastern Conference Finals, since we're talking about the Bulls and the Cavs, you need that presence, you need that leadership. You can't just turn to your lead player here. You need that father figure presence behind that
Coach
board.
Pop.
Yeah. You need someone who you can believe in, who you trust their plays, you trust their guidance. They've been here before. David Blatt doesn't have. I mean. There is no respect there.
No.
You watch them go to the huddle, and half of them are looking over in the crowd. They're looking over at the other guy's bench. They're looking on what's on the TV up there.
Or they're looking at LeBron.
I was going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, or they're looking at LeBron. They're looking anywhere but at what David Blatt is either drawing up, which I'm sure at this point could be stick figures for all I know. But they don't have any respect or confidence in their so-called leader.
David Blatt is... crafting his resignation letter on the bench, dude.
It's just Dan Gilbert, you son of a bitch. That is why the Cavs. I mean, I was debating about it. I was like, oh, Cavs, Bulls. That's I'm calling it right now. Bulls are going. Bulls are going. Cavs are not going. You have the leadership in LeBron. LeBron's been to this dance before. He's won it twice. Good for him. But you know what? He had veterans on that team who've been in that situation before. He had a coach that made it to the playoffs before without him and without Bosch. So now that LeBron doesn't have that experience around him, he can't do it on his own. If the rest of his guys are choking, if Mozgov is freaking out under the basket, he's letting Noah manhandle him, if Kyrie's getting, getting defense all over his ass, if Jimmy Butler's hitting shots like he has been before he got hurt, if Derrick Rose is being Derrick Rose, if Tom Thibodeau is being Tom Thibodeau, if he is drawing up the necessary place to shut his ass down, I'm telling you right now, the Bulls are going to the finals. I'm telling you. I feel it.
That's your long-winded way of saying
And I hate Bulls. Saying it. I hate the Bulls.
So the Bulls are going. Who's going out of the West?
Golden State. And Spurs aren't going. Don't listen to this hype. The Spurs are not going. They're not going. And it's not because I hate them. They're not going. It's a fact. It's a mathematical fact. It's in the books.
Okay. Drew.
It's in the books.
The series that I want, that I really, really want, is Spurs-Cavs. That's what I want. What I think it's going to be, is I do honestly believe it's going to be, I do think it's going to be Cavs-Warriors. I think, you made a great argument. I now think that the Bulls are going to put up way more of a fight than I initially thought. I thought, there's just not a team in the East that jumps out at me, or up until that point, there wasn't a team in the East that jumped out at me that I was like, that's a team that can go toe-to-toe with LeBron, with the Cavs, for 7 games. Or whatever, to win 4 games. So I think I think it's going to be Warriors-Cavs, and I do believe the Warriors are going to win it all this year.
They should win it all.
I think they're going to win
they
it
They should.
All.
Look, it's Warriors-Cavs. It's not even close. Let's move on.
I think it is close.
You think so?
But can I say something real quick? And I told this to Tyler, but I'm telling this to you, this might be shocking. If it is indeed Spurs-Cavs, I told Tyler, so I'm rooting for the Spurs.
Well, see, I don't know, man. There's something about that rematch and just where
LeBron
is.
I'm rooting for the Spurs.
I want LeBron
to win another ring.
But that's the thing. It's like, I love the storyline of it. I love the Spurs being back there. I love them being in LeBron's way again. I love it.
And
I
hate the Spurs, too. You know I do. But I would rather the Spurs win again than to know that LeBron left and got rewarded for it again.
Mm-hmm.
In his first year.
That would kill me. it would kill me to know that he has a ring on it that says Cleveland Cavaliers on it after his first year of leaving.
Right.
Because I think he's going to get one eventually in Cleveland. I just don't. I don't think it's going to be this.
Year. I just.
He's got to stay long.
I think it's so damn.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If he lose, if they lose, guys, when we're on here, I'll just be like, hey guys, so can we talk about how LeBron James has two rings and they say Miami Heat on him and he's in Cleveland right now? That's all I will be saying.
Buddy, if Cleveland goes to the finals and loses, I will dedicate a whole episode. I just I will enter the podcast and then I won't say a word for a fucking hour. I'll just let you go. I'll just let you go.
And man, I will go.
Drop bombs.
All right, man, we're running real long. We still got NHL to talk about. Playoffs started tonight. Let's just wait till Sunday to get into it.
Sure.
Wild haven't played a game yet.
Nope, they have not.
Blackhawks played tonight.
Double overtime.
Preds, double overtime. 1-4-3. Good job, guys. Blackhawks. Three more to go, then we're moving on. Let's go.
Blackhawks.
So it's is it not fair to ask you your predictions for the Stanley Cup Finals? Because I know, obviously, the Blackhawks are in contention, and it's so damn early. But, I mean, like, do you have – what is your ideal matchup for the Finals? I'm just curious. Does it involve the Blackhawks, or at this point, you're like, you know what? Realistically speaking, I don't even think we're going to win the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, I'm just curious because my team's not in it, so I've got no dog in this fight. Your team's in it, Drew, so, I mean,
the Minnesota Wild are in it. I can't really call them my team yet because I don't know enough about hockey yet. I will say that I don't – Blackhawks are just a different team with Patrick Kane. If there's anything that I've learned about hockey in the short time that I've been able to watch it is that – That is a team. Okay, so
Kane
back
is just
absolutely
huge.
Yeah. Like okay, so that's it. Like as Paul Allen put it, Blackhawks they regular season for show, but they postseason for dough, especially with Patrick Kane, and that's exactly what's going to happen. Too much speed. You got way too much speed.
Let me take back that question. Let me ask a different question instead. Actually, in my opinion, I mean, this might be a common sense one, but I mean, I think the Rangers might even, I mean, I don't know for certain, but with the way the Rangers have been playing, I think they might win it all. But the question I wanted to ask you, Tyler, is, in your opinion, who is the biggest threat to the Blackhawks in terms of making it to the big show?
It's a great question.
Like, out of the teams that you could very well face, who do you consider to be the biggest threat, assuming you meet them?
I would say the Wild, only because Devan Dubnyk is virtually unbeatable right now.
Okay.
And I still don't think they rested him enough. I think there's a chance he breaks down, or he's just too fatigued in these early rounds.
Darcy Kemper didn't look well. At and first he didn't look great. But
he didn't look good.
We gave up two goals in that 4-2 win against, it looked like it was going to be bad, but they beat Nashville, didn't they?
I think so.
Yeah, but, or St. Louis, and then they ended up dropping one, so, yeah.
I think
teams are starting to figure out that Devan Dubnyk is weak, low, and glove side. I don't know a lot about hockey. I've been hearing that a lot on Twin City Sports Radio. Teams are starting to get it figured out. The Blackhawks will definitely get it figured out, and they're going to be way tougher to beat with Patrick.
Yeah, but Wild are probably the biggest challenge. Nashville is a pretty big challenge. It's huge that we got this double overtime win in game one, though.
That's a huge opponent to face in the first round.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think we've got as good a shot as any to go to our third Stanley Cup in 5 years. So we'll see what happens.
Such a tough playoff. Like,
I'm excited.
So crazy.
I'm excited.
Hockey playoffs is just fucking crazy.
I know, man. I don't know.
It is.
They're scary.
Thing about it. I don't know anything. Like, I'm going to be watching and be like, this is terrifying. I don't know anything about this. But this
is considering my team already had to go into double overtime in the first game of the playoffs, like, that's just solidifies what the Stanley Cup playoffs are. It's scary. There's no shootouts. Yeah. Like, you go until a team wins. Like, that's just the way.
They win seven games with LA and lost.
They just go seven games. They just go seven games. It's just their modus operandi. Like, they just go seven games with most squads.
Stanley Cup Finals might be the toughest championship to play.
I agree. I would.
I mean, Super Bowl, obviously, you got all the pressure of the eyes watching you. NBA Finals, whatever. But World Series, too. But, like, in terms of just hard physical, like think about it. An inch to the left or right, or an inch to the left or right, your shot goes, you don't win.
Yeah, man.
Bounces off, you know, the goalpost, you don't win. It's just it's a game of, I mean, I know they call football a game of inches, like, you know, hockey's like a game of millimeters. It's like that, true. It's crazy. Sweet.
All right, let's get out of here. We'll talk more playoff hockey on Sunday. Real quick, who's your Stanley Cup winner?
The Rangers.
I gotta go with the with what little information that I have on hockey and what little I know about hockey. I gotta go with the Chicago Blackhawks. I just think Patrick Kane not only coming back now for the playoffs, but coming back fresh. Yeah, I think it's gonna be awfully difficult to beat them. But again, I don't know enough yet to really formulate a truly professional elite hockey mind opinion.
Next time we come back on Sunday, I'll explain why I'm picking the Rangers. It does have with how they're playing all season, but there's another reason altogether that I'll mention why I'm picking the Rangers.
Fair enough. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I want to go Blackhawks, but I'm not going to because it makes me sound like a homer. I'm gonna go with the New York Islanders.
Woo! We're going.
They're having a historic season. They just took out Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals in just stunning fashion tonight, 4-1. They're a tough team. Like they slumped near the end of the season. They weren't playing that great, but this could be like their Cinderella story. Like they've been to the playoffs twice in the past two decades, but this could be their year, and they're an exciting team to watch.
What seed are the Islanders? Do we know? I don't know.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Second or third?
I don't remember. It doesn't matter. I'm going with the Islanders. I want to go with the Blackhawks. In my heart, it's still the Blackhawks, but I'm not going to pick them on a podcast because that's just kind of lame.
Florida Panthers beat the New York Islanders in a shootout. That was pretty awesome.
Sure, yeah. Sure. All right. So we're back on Sunday. As I said, we've got the website up and running. It's the 51yardline.com, 5151. You don't need to spell it out like a moron because that's lame. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/the51yardline, and Twitter, at the 51-yard line. You can follow us on our respective personal pages. Facebook.com/TylerBerry, Facebook.com/DrewWillers, Facebook.com/SteveCravens, and me on Twitter at the Tie Game. We'll be back on Sunday. We'll have a nice little announcement about who our new permanent co-host is. And it's not who you're thinking. It's probably who you're thinking. But that doesn't matter. So yeah, with that, go Blackhawks, go White Sox, and RIP Pacers.
Suck Steve. More for Okafor. That's what they say, right? No, okay. Mm-hmm. Apparently not. Go Wolves. You suck.
Yeah. Well, if Tyler's gonna say it like that, rest in peace 49ers. Rest in peace Heat, and rest in peace Panthers.
He being sucks.
All right.
Here's to 2015-2016.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
As always, thanks for listening, guys. For my man, Steve Cravens.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm Andrew Willers.
Thanks for listening, guys.
I'm Tyler Berry, and we're back on Sunday, I promise. See y'all then. Bye.